Welcome back, our twisted little friends. You are listening to Murder Maidens, a podcast dedicated to discussing crimes committed by women. Your hosts are
Monica,
Robin,
Sandy,
and today's presenter will be Monica.
Yeah.
You can hear my drum solo.
So everyone knows that Halloween is my favorite holiday, and I'm so excited that I found a Halloween murder.
Spooky. Yeah.
So today I will be discussing the Fabiano Halloween murder, which is also known as the trick-or-treat murder.
Ooh. Her name was Fabiana.
We'll get into that. So this all takes place in Sun Valley, California, on the night of October 31st.
Halloween?
That is Halloween. 1957. So I'm going to start with a crime, and I'm going to kind of backpedal and then come full circle, okay? So there's a couple by the name of Peter and Betty Fabiano. Peter was 35, Betty was 36. They were settling down for bed. But little did they know at the same time that there were two women by the name of Joan Rabble and Goldine Pizer were sitting in a car parked outside of their house.
It's like my biggest fear.
Yeah. So, yeah. Don't look out the window. So Joan and Goldine had been there since 9 p.m. and were waiting for all the lights to be turned off in the house. Shortly after 11, the master bedroom light went off, and Joan turned to Goldine and said, "All right, do it."
Do what?
You'll find out. So, Goldine was dressed in men's clothing and a mask when she went up to the Fabiano's door and rang the doorbell.
I'm so creeped out because this is like my day. I don't answer the door. Don't come knock if I'm not expecting you. Like,
I am the same way.
My heart is pounding right now because like so many murder movies. Like, I'm always like, Jim, we can't have that house that has like double doors. It's a murder house.
Double doors.
Like, I am so petrified of somebody coming to knock on our door.
It's like the movie Strangers. Have you seen the movie Strangers? Yeah.
So creepy. Yeah. And what did she say? Like, is so-and-so home? And you're like, nobody lives here by that name. Like,
well, you know me. When I have my apartment, like, I would not answer the door if you did not call me or text me that you were outside. You're staying out there.
Yes.
Either that or I would creep on the side of the blinds. Like, just, you see one eyeball looking out the window? Yeah. So
I'm freaked out already.
So when they heard the doorbell, Peter got out of bed to go answer the door, thinking it was a trick-or-treater.
What time of night is this?
This was 11 p.m. It was a little bit after 11. Yeah. So when he got to the door, he opened the door and said, "It's a little late for this, isn't it?" Thinking it was a trick-or-treater. Now, Goldine's response was no. And she raised her hand, which had a paper bag wrapped around it, and shot him in the chest. So the gun was in the paper bag. Does anyone know why it would be in a paper bag?
Does that muffle the sound?
No. To keep gunshot residue off her hand?
It's going to keep the gunshot residue within the bag, mostly. Some might get on it, but more specifically, it catches the bullet. So when it ejects
the shell
casing, okay. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah,
because I was catching the bullet.
You know what I mean.
It took me a minute.
So the shell casing wouldn't be ejected into the ground because, like, when you shoot, sometimes like you don't know where it goes, and then you're searching around for a shell casing. So now there's no shell casing left at the scene of the crime.
Okay, she did her research a little. Obviously not enough.
Not enough.
But
So she wound up shooting Peter in the chest, and then she ran off. So she didn't check to see if he died, shot once, ran. She jumped into the waiting car where Joan was behind the wheel, and Joan turned and kissed her and said, "Thank you." Yeah. So Joan hauled ass out of there. Now Betty heard the shot and ran downstairs to see her husband unconscious and bleeding at the front door. So Betty's teenage daughter, Judy, was also home and came down when she heard the shot. Now, she ran two doors down to their neighbor, Bud Alper, who was actually a member of the police department. So he contacted authorities, and they said within, you know, minutes, there were several officers just, like, swarming the scene. So Peter was transferred to Sun Valley Receiving Hospital, where he later did die from his injuries. He never regained consciousness after he was shot, so
they, you know, didn't get any information. They didn't get
any information out of him. Now, you know, they were trying to talk to people. Now, they said a 15-year-old boy did see a car speed away around that time, but he really couldn't give any more information than that. So, you know, they didn't really have much to go on, and they didn't find any shell casings. So there was no real evidence besides, like, the hole in his chest that he was shot. Like, there was nothing.
It was clearly someone wanted him personally dead because they didn't bother with his wife or his child. Who was
yeah. Him at the time. Yeah. So they were saying, because now this was in L.A., and even in the 50s, apparently there was a lot of gang activity back then. So first they were going the route, well, maybe this was gang-related.
It's always gang-related.
The shooting.
No, I said it's always gang-related. It's already. They don't know what caused it.
Yeah. So they looked into his past, and he did have a minor record in 1948 for bookmaking. Does anyone know what bookmaking is?
Is it like fixing books?
So it's a bookie. He's a bookie. Yeah. We call it a bookie. I guess they called it bookmaking back then. But, you know, running numbers and, like, taking bets and things like that. So, but besides that, they didn't find anything else. Like, he pretty much had, yeah, he had a clean record. So they quickly ruled out that, all right, we don't think this is a gang thing because, you know, just one person, he got shot, they ran away. Like, so, you know, meanwhile, Joan and Goldine returned the car that they were in. They'd actually borrowed it from a neighbor. So they drove back, they dropped off the car, and they burned their clothes because they didn't want any evidence or anything like that on it. So they actually weren't too bad initially at, like, kind of covering their tracks. now Joan turned to Goldine and said, "Forget you ever knew me." So they went their separate ways, you know. And the next day, Goldine realized she still had the gun in her possession. So she didn't know what to do with it. You know, they never discussed this. Like, they, you know, what am I going to do with this weapon? So she wound up, went down to a department store and rented a locker, like a little storage locker, and put the gun in there and, like, just left.
But she rented the storage locker in her name?
Yes. I didn't say they were the brightest people, but yes. So we'll get to that.
Now, can... back real fast. How did they know each other?
So that's where we're getting to. So I figured I wanted to get up front with the murder. Let's go back, see how everyone's connected, and then we'll get to the outcome.
Okay.
What happened after that.
All right.
So the detectives interviewed, like, the family and the friends, but it didn't really turn up with anything. Like, no one could figure out why. Why was he shot? So for several days after his death, Betty was just distraught. Like, she was unconsolable. So she was actually kind of sedated. Like, she was getting, like, heavy doses of medication. So she wasn't, you know, any good to talk to the police. So after a few days, she was more coherent. And the detectives asked if there was anybody that would have reason to kill her husband. She said, actually, there was. A woman by the name of Joan Rebel. She was a family friend, but that's all she said. She wouldn't elaborate why. She just said, this one person is the only person I could think of that would want my husband dead. So let's go back a little bit. See why she thinks this person wants her husband killed.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So we're going to start with Peter and Betty. So back in the late 1940s, Peter and Betty met in New York, and Peter was an ex-Marine who was driving a truck, and Betty was actually a divorcee with two children. So, you know, they had two kids, but, you know, was with her ex-husband. So they did get married in 1956 and moved to L.A., where they opened two beauty shops. So,
hey.
Yeah. Your people's round.
Your people's.
So Peter hired Joan Rebel to work at one of her shops. Okay. All right. Now, Joan was a 40-year-old freelance photographer, and she became close to the family. Now, Joan's life was kind of a little bit of a mystery, like when they went back and look at records. So she was traveling between like LA and Hawaii. I guess I had read that she was trying to get like inspiration. You know, she was a photographer and like a writer and things like that. And now it's stated on her transport manifest or whatever that her birthplace was Philly. But then there was other documents saying that she emigrated from Lithuania. So she's kind of like no one quite knows her background, like exactly where she came from. So she had been friends with the family for like 4 years at this point. Now, this is where shit starts to kind of happen. So Peter and Betty started having marital problems. So who does she move in with? Joan.
Betty does.
Huh?
Betty moves in with Joan.
Yes, at this point.
Joan's single?
Joan is single. So they start spending a lot of time together. They're living together.
See where this is going.
And people called their relationship abnormal. So back in the 1950s, that was code for lesbians.
It's going down.
Yes. So Betty eventually turns around and decides she wants to go back to her husband.
Oh, no. That's
she wants to work things out. Mm-hmm.
A woman's gone.
Yeah. Peter finds out about Betty and Joan's relationship and basically makes an ultimatum. If you want to stay with me and work things out, you can no longer see Joan. Yep. So obviously this infuriates Joan. So 1957, Joan meets Goldine, who is 43 years old. She's a medical secretary at a children's hospital. She was also a divorcee. When she met Joan, she only lived a mile away from her. So they were like right in the same area. And Goldine was known to date other women after she divorced her husband. So now, Goldine had never met Betty or Peter, but Joan would constantly tell her that he's evil, he's an evil man, he beats his wife, he sells drugs, like just constantly harp on how horrible of a person this guy is.
I feel like that's always the way it is. Like whenever you hear like someone who kills for like a woman, they're always like the stories that they have about the person that are never really true. But it always comes back to the same thing. Like, they beat on her, they don't treat her right, and then the boyfriend kills the husband, or in this case, girlfriend.
Yes. So, Joan convinced Goldine to kill for her. So, Joan and Goldine planned this murder for 3 months. On September 21st, 1957, Goldine purchased a .38 special from a gun shop, which Joan had given her the money for.
Okay.
But it's in Goldine's name. It's not in Joan's name.
She make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Joan had driven by the Fabiano's house a few times, and she would point it out, like, this is their house, and they would even see Peter out there. She pointed him out on several occasions because she wanted her to make sure, this is Peter, this is what he looks like. Mm-hmm. Don't mess up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got one shot.
One shot and you got to take it. So Goldine kept the gun in her possession from September 21st until Halloween night when Joan came and picked her up and committed the murders. So a few weeks go by and the trail's going cold. Like they can't find anyone who knows anything about what's going on. You know what I mean? They eventually got a tip and they wound up at the department store and found the gun in the locker. So I'm not quite sure how they found out about this or like how it came about. I'm not quite sure. Yeah. I couldn't find anything like who tipped them off.
Joan.
Possibly. So they go to this department store. They find the gun. They did ballistics testing and determined this is the same gun that shot Peter.
They did ballistics in the 50s?
I guess they did.
I'm sure it's not as fancy as it is now. Like, it's probably like, yeah, let me shoot it. That looks the same. Yeah. We'll go with this. So, but they did find out that it was registered to one Goldeen Pizer.
Rookie mistake. Mm-hmm.
So, now, it's November 12th. Pizer was arrested in her home. And they took her down to the station, and she started singing like a canary.
She was like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
You're going down, too.
So, she confessed it was all Joan's idea. Joan coerced her into killing Peter, and even though she didn't even know the man and, you know, how evil he was, he had to kill for her because, you know, he was such a bad person. Like, she did this all for Joan. Like, I guess, you know, she was in love with her. So the police interviewed Joan, and she denied knowing anything about the murders, obviously.
Her name's nowhere on top.
Yeah,
of
her name's not on anything. Her fingerprints aren't on anything. Like, she got Goldeen to do everything. So they finally got an arrest warrant for Joan, and that's when she lawyered up. So the trial was scheduled for late December, but before the trial, both women were subject to, like, psych evaluations because they believed that their choice in partners and sexual orientation
was made them mentally ill.
Yeah. It was like a sickness, and they didn't believe that they were fit to stand trial. So, okay, so once again, Goldeen told the psychologist everything about how it was all Joan's idea, everything like that. And she told the psychiatrist that she had no motivation for the killing. She didn't know them personally. That whatever motivation she had was just to please Joan. And she said, I was always easily influenced, and she's very impressionable, and she was always trusting. So, you know, she believed, I guess Joan believed, said she loved her. If you love me, you're going to do this for me, probably.
Wait, like, you killing you're not even killing Joan's husband at this point. You killing Joan's ex-lover's husband. Like, this is a slippery slope you going down. Yeah. She's using you, bro.
Yeah.
She's playing the innocent card.
Yeah.
Like, the extra innocent card.
Yeah. So, both women did plead not guilty to first-degree murder. And Goldeen pled it for reason of insanity. Now, during the trial, Goldeen cried, was remorseful, you know, everything like that. Meanwhile, Joan sat there stone-faced and was smiling at everyone the whole time.
Damn, cold.
Yeah. So, one of the doctors actually did come out and label her schizophrenic. Okay. So
there might have been some.
Some, yeah. So some. She definitely had some mental issues there. Yeah. And Joan refused to testify. So she was just sitting back. She's
not going to implicate herself.
Yeah. She was just sitting back, like, whatevs. Now, both women were charged with first degree murder, which was later lessened to second degree with a plea deal that they did. Now, one of the things that I saw was the reason why Joan agreed to the plea deal. I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently in the 1950s, it was illegal to be a homosexual in California.
That's very possible.
I was going to say, I believe that.
I believe that.
So that's the reason why she agreed to the plea deal. So
it was probably you'd get less time for murder than you would for being a homosexual.
Right. Listen to this sentence. They were sentenced, both of them were sentenced to 5 years to life.
What?
That, like, not like 5 to 10, 10 to 15. No, 5 years to life. That's
a long time.
That's a big difference. Yeah.
Could be 5. Maybe you'll get out in 2 years for good behavior.
Life,
maybe we'll just keep you.
Life's 30 years?
So it depends on the state. Yeah. Okay. It depends on what state you're in. So life can be either. Now, life with parole. So it can be anywhere from 15 years to 30 years with parole. Now, if you get life without parole, that means you're dying in prison. Mm-hmm. So you know, I don't know, I guess it also, you know, good behavior, like crowding, like of the system and things like that. So, but it is state to state. Now, I believe in California, I looked up, I believe California law for life in prison is 25 to 30.
I was going to say, I thought it usually starts at 25, but most people who get life sentences like that or like it'll or for murder, it's generally 25 to life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you usually hear. Five to life. That's just
Just a little ridiculous.
It's a really wide range.
Yeah, it is. So Goldine was eventually released. Now, it's kind of unsure of when exactly the date, how long she actually spent in jail. But she did continue to live her life in L.A., and she did pass in 1998 at the age of 83.
She lived a long life.
Yeah. So, but the odd thing is Joan. Joan disappeared. She ghosted. No one knows when she was released or if she was released. They assumed she was released at the same time that Goldine was. You know what I mean? Because Goldine's the one that actually committed the murder, even though Joan was the mastermind behind it. But no one knows when she was released, if she was released, or what happened to her afterwards. So basically, from the time that she was put in jail, there's no more records of her.
Wow. Was she even Joan to begin with?
Who knows?
Because all the information seems to not really be there before this and then after this.
What if Joan was in Goldine's mind?
Oh.
What?
That's some crazy movie happening right now.
Betty eventually sold the businesses and lived in Palm Desert, California until she died in 1999. She was the age of 81.
Now, did they ever find any evidence that Betty had anything to do with
it? So there was never any evidence to prove that she had anything to do with her husband's murder.
Okay. She was clearly
so innocent. You never know.
I wish we had more information on what happened to Betty after all this. Because, like, did Betty, like, marry, like, Barbara?
Because no.
Barbara could have been Joan.
That's true.
Because we all know what happened.
So I saw two different, like, conflicting things. So one thing I read about Betty was that she just lived, like, never remarried. She was heartbroken, blah, blah, blah. Something else I read said that she married, like, 10 years later to someone else. But I don't believe there was a name, so
it could be male or female orientation.
It could be anybody.
10 years seems about the amount of time that 5 to life would give you.
Just saying. So that is my story on the trick-or-treat murders.
It's very, like, twist and turny. Like, you don't know. I have so many questions about Joan.
Yeah. That's what I said. There's no, like, one thing was saying she was born in Philadelphia. One thing said she was born in Lithuania. Like, there was no real.
Maybe she was born in Philadelphia, but, like, her parents had, like, come from Lithuania.
It's so possible.
Technically, she was Lithuanian, but born in Philadelphia.
It's possible.
My question is, why Halloween night? Because there were some tricks up to some treats.
I guess because they knew he would answer the door.
Well, Joan, because Joan was in disguise. Remember what I said? Yeah. So Joan, or not Joan, Goldine. So Joan actually had brought Goldine, like, men's clothing. She had a mask on.
They picked that night because they knew it would be an excuse for him to open up the door thinking it's just a trick-or-treater.
I mean, you could knock on anybody's door on any night and I'm sure they would open it.
Nope.
Well, I mean, too, like, so if you don't want to get caught and you want to wear a costume, what night is the best night to do that?
It's true.
If you see somebody running in the car in a clown mask, you wouldn't think.
I mean, I think, like, April 23rd is a good night to wear a costume and knock on someone's door.
Halloween all year round.
That's true.
I mean, if you're in Philly and you see someone coming up to your door in, like, you know, a mask, I ain't answering it.
Mm-mm.
I'm pretty sure no matter where you are, you don't want to answer a door if someone has a mask. I'd be like, oh no, the purge is starting.
The purge has commenced.
Did you hear about that town that was playing the purge music for their... the time. Oh, what is it? Oh, they had like a curfew. And so when the curfew came, they were playing the purge music to let everybody know...
Oh,
to go home, and they didn't realize it was the same music. And so that, it caused a little bit of a kerfuffle.
Not quite related. So, but I had a friend who, her husband's a cop, and he used to ride through North Philly blasting bad boys. What you gonna do?
Even the cops theme song would be pretty good.
Yes.
Anytime I hear like the siren written, I always think of like Twister and like a tornado's coming. And Jim's like, that's not like, because that's the sound that's in Twister. So every time I hear it, I'm like, oh my God, like especially during storms. And Jim finally was like, there's no fucking tornado coming.
Well, down the road, there is a volunteer firehouse. Mm-hmm. And I was stopped at the light and their siren went off. It sounds like the Silent Hill siren.
Oh my God. Yes. I would have shit my pants. Yes.
Did I move? So it was about 3 or 4 months after I moved to Texas, the tornado sirens were going off down the street. And like, I didn't know what it was. And someone was like, maybe it's a tornado siren. I think I was watching a movie and I was like, no, it's fine. It's fine. I was like, we'll just watch this movie.
Did you get a text like shelter? Like,
no, I didn't. I just thought, well, because we lived on base. So I thought like before that, so the sirens would test every so often and we'd hear them like once a week going on. So I thought this was just a test of the siren service or something. Well, there was a tornado about a mile and a half away from our house.
Meanwhile, you're sitting there watching like Beetlejuice and there's a house floating by your window.
That's like Monica texted me the one day and was like, oh, shelter in place, we're hiding in the basement. Me and Jim slept through all the texts and the alarms and we were like, oh, so I'm glad, happy that no tornado came our way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, what are the chances? I'm just going to sit here and finish this movie and hope for the best. Where are you going to go? Like, in Texas, none of the houses have, like, actual basements. It's like, I would be in my bathtub that was probably made from, like, plastic because it peeps be cheap as hell. So, I would have flown away with the cows.
I don't know where we'll go. Because we got the oil tank, washer and dryer, and then this bathroom has windows. So, like, we're just freaking screwed.
There's a little window there.
Yeah.
I think you'd be hide under the futon.
Oh, yeah. We can go in that little back alley that every time I'm going up the steps and it's, like, dark, I run up the steps thinking, like, a little midget's going to come out and grab, like, my ankles and, like, pull me under.
They're called little people, Sandy. They don't like to be
called midgets. Oh, I'm sorry. Love yous.
Love you more.
Should we play our game?
Yeah.
All right. The setting. It's Halloween night and you are going to a big costume party.
Yeah.
A lot of people will be there. And guess what? They're all getting drunk.
Not on Halloween night.
But not you. But not you.
Well, have you met me?
You have other plans in mind.
I do have other plans.
Your target. Oh my God. Oh my God. I just read the first name and I was like cracking up, but it's not. All right. Your target. That bitch Carol. But then it gets really funny. Who stole the love of your life? Oh my God. These are so hard to read.
Do you need take a moment, comprise yourself, start over.
By blowing him outside of the Wendy's parking lot.
That sounds like a Carol thing to do.
That does. I wonder if he was eating chili at the same time.
Could he find a tiger paw?
Right. It's like a blumpkin. People from who are not from Philly who doesn't know what a blumpkin is, it's when you get a blowjob while eating a Wawa hoagie.
And if the tomato falls on our head, it's extra points.
Well, actually, no. You have to be taking a shit.
Yeah,
right?
The blumpkins.
I thought the blumpkin was when you're on the toilet.
Yeah. You're eating getting a blowjob.
It's the same thing. Like, you have to be on the... No, I think it's... You have to be taking a shit, getting a blowjob, while eating a Wawa hoagie, and you get extra points if the tomato falls off onto her head.
All right. Your weapons available. Who's first and second this week and third?
I went first last week, so it's not me.
So I think I'm first.
Wait, did I go first last week?
No, I went first.
No, so I think I'm first. Yeah. All right. So our weapons available are a candy bar with razor blades inside, apple filled with poison or a pumpkin filled with deadly spiders?
These are weak sauce. Get Brian on the phone.
They're all like food related.
I don't know, but I feel like our Target is much funnier than our murder weapons. Oh my God, our Target. This year.
So to recap, we're at a party on Halloween. We got to kill that bitch Carol.
Everybody's getting drunk but us.
That bitch Carol
who stole the love of your life by giving him a BJ in the Wendy's parking lot.
Hell of a BJ.
That's how I wrote mine in.
The love of my life.
All right. This is hard because you have to think of how you're going to get Carol to...
Yeah, because why would Carol come near you? She knows she's looking for an ass whooping when she gets close to you.
I have to think, how am I going to get Carol specifically? All right. I think I'm going to do a pumpkin filled with deadly spiders.
That's what I was going to do.
I was going to do, too.
Oh, damn.
And we always want the same thing.
Because we all got the same murders on our mind.
Okay, so I think... As Carol's, you know, getting drunk, she's loving up on your love, I'm going to sneak out of the party, and I'm going to put the pumpkin in her car. So when she gets in her car, she gets eaten by the deadly spiders. But I'm going to have my gloves on, so when I open up the car, I have no fingerprints on the pumpkin. I'm going to, you know, creep over, you know, be all stealth-like.
Because now we all carry murder gloves.
Apparently. Our back pocket at all time.
So I think it's pretty lame, but I think that's how I'm going to do it. And then just hope for the best when she gets in the car. Because I figured by that point, the spiders are going to be kind of everywhere, and she'll kind of just get in and get eaten alive.
This is true. She may get eaten alive. Can you put, like, some spider repellent, or some spider attractant on the steering wheel?
Well, they're deadly spiders, so I feel like they're going to go...
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puff?
Yeah. I'm hoping.
But I feel like, here's my only thing. This is the problem I have with your scenario. If I was like a police officer, the pumpkin, mm-hmm. It's filled with deadly spiders. Like, in my mind, I'm thinking pumpkin, like someone carved it and opened it up and put the deadly spiders in. So, like, if there's still like spiders in there, would they think maybe someone did this on purpose? That's the only problem I have with that scenario. The pumpkin with the deadly spider scenario. Like,
I was kind of thinking, like, they would think, like, she got the pumpkin and there were spiders. Because, like, I'm thinking, I wasn't thinking carving.
But how else are you getting deadly spiders inside a pumpkin?
Oh, yeah. So I would have to. Yeah. I would have. Because I was thinking of cutting it, but you're going to have to, because I can't just put the lid back on and then be like,
spiders, don't come out until your Target.
So you have to carve it, but I'm going to have to like put them in a box and then kind of like toss it in the back seat. And hopefully she has like a messy back seat so they kind of just blend in.
I'll put a little bit of cocaine on the seat.
Do spiders like cocaine? Is that a new thing?
I feel like they most certainly would.
So we'll leave crumb nuggets somewhere. All right. Who's next?
Robin.
You get a candy bar with razor blades or apple filled with poison.
So my problem with the apple filled with poison is like the same problem I had in like week whatever that we had the weed killer. And so you like you run into the same issue. You got poison. You got to explain away poison. Yeah. Candy bar with razor blades. I mean, it is Halloween. If he eats it. Oh wait, she eats it. It's Carol. Sorry, Carol. If she eats it, like, who's to say where she got the candy bar from? I mean, so I guess the same thing could go with the apple too.
Yeah.
Do we have the apple filled with poison? Are we doing the apple bobbin?
That's what I was thinking. Well, you have to pick one. Just pick one.
I want them all. Sugar, honey, iced tea. Okay, I'll take the candy bar with razor blades. Because I feel like you just have them eat it.
But how are you getting her to eat it?
Sugar. It's his name. Her name is Carl now. Because that's the only way I'm going to remember. Carl. How am I going to get her to eat it? I'm going to shove it down her fucking throat because she gave my husband, boyfriend a blow.
She can obviously can take things down her throat.
Now, yes. But here's the question now. Do you split that candy bar in half and shove it down his throat as well?
I mean, I feel like that would be fair, yeah. But, like, it's kind of hard to explain how two people got razor blade candy down his throat.
And that bitch dies, and he might come back.
But why would you want that?
I mean, I would.
Or you could take one of those razor blades and cut his dick off.
Sounds like the... What's that, Lorena Bobbitt?
Lorena Bobbitt. This is how... Oh, my... Oh, god damn it. All right. So... You cut his dick off with one of the razor blades, right?
And then you make her choke on
he
that
dies.
Shit.
Yeah. Up. There you go.
Why are we always trying to make people choke on dicks? That's what I want to know. Every week. First was Danny DeVito's dick. Well, doll dick. And then, like, now we're
trying to get this.
So that could go either two ways. So you can cut it off. He bleeds out. Now he's dead. And then you could either shove that appendage down her throat and make her choke on it, or you could just shove the candy bar down her throat and kind of make it look like murder suicide, or she chopped it off and he shoved the blades down her throat to...
Well, you got... Yeah,
not good at murder. Like, I really feel like the only way, like, with the candy bar is just to eat it, you know what I mean? Because, like, how else are you gonna get someone... Like, are they doing some kind of weird candy sex play? And she's like,
you got to get her super drunk and then be like, oh, here, this will help sober you up. And then just like when you've been drunk, I will fucking put anything in my mouth. I'm like,
Yeah, we all know.
So then she'd mistake the candy bar for his dick. And then she dies.
And she dies.
Is that why Jim gets you drunk?
Yeah. Basically.
I'll start
the only time he's getting it.
So, Monica, you get a apple filled with poison.
Great.
Well, she likes to go bobbing for things, so I mean apples.
I was thinking that, like, bobbing for apples, but you can't guarantee she's going to get the poison apple. That's, like, the only... issue I have with that. I mean, I don't know. All right, maybe, I don't know. I take my little murder gloves out, right? Because they're in my back pocket.
Oh, damn.
You forgot your murder gloves. You're caught.
You're caught.
I mean, you know, we could take my little murder gloves out, dress her up like Snow White.
It is Snow White.
Dress her up like Snow White, right? Make her eat the poison apple. Like, I don't know. Do something symbolic like that. Like Halloween thing, like suicide or something or other.
She was racked with guilt from sucking your man's wiener at Wendy's.
You know what he missed writing this? What Carol was dressed as.
True. I know, there is no costume. There's no weird sex toy. Like, I just... Why couldn't it be, like, a candy bar-shaped dildo with razor blades in it?
A dick lollipop with razor blades?
Well, didn't you get a bag of dicks the one time from Amanda?
There's two stories with dicks with me and Amanda.
All edible.
Yes.
Aren't all dicks edible?
Yes, but this is candy version.
One year I sent Amanda a bag of, I thought they were gummy dicks, but they wound up being like little hard candy dicks. And then one year for Valentine's Day, me and her both sent each other the same thing, had no idea. And we both get a milk chocolate solid, like 3-pound dick in the mail. And we both cracking up because she got it the day before mine. And she was like, I can't wait for you to get your gift now tomorrow. And I'm like cracking up because I'm like, I just sent you this 3-pound solid dick. And the next day I get mine in the mail. It's the same exact thing. And guess where I started when I started eating it?
Tit.
No, the balls. Not eat the balls. I did not get through that whole dick either.
Amateur.
But yeah.
All right.
Well,
I think we're all getting caught. Well, especially Robin, because she didn't put her murder gloves on.
Yeah, Robin's caught because she didn't get her murder gloves.
My murder shoes on, my murder gloves on. I was just like so excited because it was Halloween.
Although I feel like, I do feel like I like your answer the best, though.
Yeah.
I do like your answer the best, Robin.
Don't lie to make friends.
No, I do.
So once we start, you know, getting a little bit better with setting everything up and figuring out, you know, technology, we are going to start polls. And we were like, you, the listeners, decide on who you think would get away with murder. We don't have that set up now because we're still learning things in the 20th century.
You don't ever have to choose me for the best answer. Just tell me I'm the prettiest. And we'll be Alrighty, so thanks for listening, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, murdermaidens.com, and you can listen to us on iTunes and Spotify. So please give us a thumbs up and hit the subscribe button. Until next time, don't get murdered.
Don't murder anyone.
And don't do anything we wouldn't do.